educators in the room. I was concerned that when you heard this topic, you might think that I was going to give you a solution about how you can get your teams to respect you. But in that way, the topic is a little bit misleading, because today I really want to talk about respect, but more specifically about self-respect and self-esteem, and how it's important for teens and what's going on with them and how it can affect their behavior towards others as well. There's room, no. So, hold on, let me just put out two more.
Thank you.
Okay, so to kind of address how self-respect is important in, and how self-esteem is important in how it affects a child's behavior or how it affects their ability to respect others, I call that part one.
Sorry, last word.
You know what, now I don't have any more. So, whoever comes will listen.
Here's one.
Oh, there's an extra one?
Okay.
Thank you. I love the source sheet. You're in charge. Okay. So, part one, the external problem. My child is disrespectful. The underlying problem, my child lacks self-confidence and self-respect. So, if you look at the at source one from this psychologist, Carl Picard, from my view in family counseling, self-esteem can have significant impact on relationships. It generally seems that family members are more prone to act badly toward each other when they are feeling bad about themselves. The worse they feel about themselves, the worse they treat others, the worse they get treated in return, and the worse they end up feeling about themselves. And then he repeats it. In low self-esteem families, relationships can become mutually destructive. In high esteem families, however, the reverse seems more likely to occur. The better family members feel about themselves, the better they treat each other, the better they get treated in return, the better off everyone tends to become. In high esteem families, relationships can become mutually affirming. Members seem more inclined to bring out the best in each other, not the worst. So in other words, he's starting to say that the way our teens or even ourselves feel about themselves is going to affect the way that they treat others, the way they relate to others. And similarly, this connection between the way you're made to feel and the way you want to treat others is noted by Chazal in a number of places. So the Midrash in Breishit, Rabbah, source 2, says, Shalot Omar, Hawil benit baziti yit bazel chaveri imi, Hawil benit kalalti yit kalel chaveri imi. You should not say, since I have been put to shame, let my neighbor be put to shame. Or since I have been cursed, let my friend be cursed. In other words, the famous expression, misery loves company, right? If I'm feeling low about myself, what Chazal recognizes, there is a tendency to want others to feel that way also. And maybe even to cause others to feel that way. But this is not okay. Amar Rabbi Tanchuma, im asiti kach, kein dali lemiata mivze bidmut elokim asa oto. You should know when you shame another person, you are shaming someone who is created in the image of God. And though he doesn't bring this completely full circle, I would say that not only do you have to be aware of everyone else's being created in the image of God, and therefore embarrassing someone, mistreating someone, being like bringing down a piece of God himself. But you yourself are also created, obviously, with Tselem Elohim. So when you are shamed, when you allow yourself to be shamed, you have also, that is also reducing, or someone is trying to put down someone who is created in the image of God, bringing God down as well. But there is a connection. Similarly, the Mishnah and Shavuot, which is talking, the context is speaking about when you can't use various names of God. So, HaMekalel Atzmo V'Chavero B'Kulan Over B'Lo Ta'aseh. One who curses himself and his friend is over a Lo Ta'aseh. Does a certain prohibition, transgresses a negative prohibition. In other words, what's very interesting is we would of course expect that it's not permitted to curse another person, to shame another person, but what the Mishnah is pointing out is it's also not okay, it's also a transgression to curse yourself. And yes, because you're taking God's name in vain, but more than that, because you are not allowed to use God's name to put yourself down, to curse yourself, and to bring yourself down, because we are created by Tselem Elohim. So I think there's a hint in Chazal to what we saw more concretely by the psychologist that there is a connection between how one feels about themselves and how one tends to treat others, and it is equally inappropriate, just as we know, it is of course important to treat others with respect, to love our neighbors, it is equally important, or the starting point for that seems to be the way we treat ourselves, or the way we think about ourselves. So part two, kind of what I wanted to discuss, is the importance of building confidence in children. Now we've already started to address that the way one feels about, the way a person feels about themselves affects their behavior towards others. But really, why is self-esteem such an important characteristic to have? Why is it so important to the makeup of a person? So I love this quote here, because parents are always asking, you know, should I praise my kids a lot, or am I going to make them arrogant? Are they going to think too highly of themselves? And I think the advice has swung over the years in both directions. But this quote by Alvin Price: parents need to fill a child's bucket of self-esteem so high that the rest of the world can't poke enough holes to drain it dry. So, especially in today's day and age, where it is, I see how much pressure there is on teenagers to perform. I teach in North Shore. The pressure that kids feel to get into college, to take certain number of APs, to get a high score on the SATs, and how their self-esteem plummets because they may have thought that they were smart, they may have thought they were capable, and it's like each step of the way, they're often being brought down. They're being told they're you may have thought you're good, but you're... There are kids out there who are that much better than you. And you're not going to make this team, or you're not going to get into this school, or you need to improve your score by 200 points, or you didn't pass the regent, or you didn't... So there are so many... And that's all forgetting, the social piece that brings down a child's self-esteem so often. I'm about to send my oldest to sleepaway camp for the first time ever. So I'm like, you know, panicked, even though I'm putting on a nice, happy, smiley face that it's going to be the best thing ever. But we know how it can, that social experiences have the ability to raise up our children and make them feel so good. And on the flip side, they can be the traumatic experiences that our kids will be talking about in therapy 20 years later. So, yeah.
That's what I want to say to you. You started off with the teenage and the schools. I think it goes way down below that. I mean, even now, in kindergarten and nursery, they're talking about preparing kids for such and such a school. You have to start much earlier so they'll be ready.
Right. Absolutely. I don't know about it. Well, you're right. In kindergarten, they've beefed up the curriculum. But if you look at Source 5,
Source 4.
So we're up to Source 4. So Source 5 will address what you just said, but let's do Source 4 first. So this idea of building a kid's self-esteem up. There's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that has a curious statement for anyone who doesn't want to raise a kid who thinks too highly of themselves. And it says, Lefikach, kol echad ve'echad chayav lomar bishvili nivra ha'olam. Therefore, everyone is required to say, the world was created just for me. And we've met children who seem to feel that way, and it's not usually very appealing. So what is this statement about? So first of all, the context of the Mishnah in Sanhedrin was actually a witness in a capital crime. So clearly, it was initially stated that he should understand the responsibility of his role, of his actions, that he's about to potentially send someone to death for witnessing, you know, as a witness in a death penalty crime. But it's also, this statement appears beyond the Mishnah and Sanhedrin in a number of Midrashim, and not always with such a severe, not always in the context of responsibility. What else can it mean? It means we have to recognize our self-importance in order to have a positive effect on the world. I teach a Jewish ethics class, and when I covered self-esteem as a topic, I used to do this source, and when did I first come to use this source is one of my children was watching a commercial once on TV that, you know, if you donate a penny, you can save the world, or it was something along those lines. Your one phone call can have this effect. And she's a very straight person, so she said, that's silly. How can one phone call save a world? And I thought about this source. And I thought, this is really sometimes the problem with both children and adults who don't really get involved more in chesed or social action, in that they it's not that they're bad people, but they often just feel like, What's my signature on the petition going to really do? What's my phone call going to do? Or I can't change the situation. So this is another example of how believing in oneself and in one's importance can actually change us to be better people, to do more in the world. Yesterday, we had a scholar in residence who was speaking about Rev Lichtenstein and Rev Amital. And he told a story that was very interesting. He said Rev Amital, who was the former Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion, when he was a Holocaust survivor, and when he first arrived in Israel, and he joined the army, and he was fighting in the War of Independence, so he goes out to the battle by Latrun, and a lot of people were being given guns for the first time, and one of the officers said, who here has ever shot a gun? And only two people in the unit had ever shot a gun, and he was one of them. And he looks at Rav Amital and he said, you know, okay, you're going to be the commander. And he said, well, I can't be a commander. Well, I don't know what I'm doing. And he refused to take it on, and the other guy did, and it was a horrible battle. And most lives were lost, and the guy didn't know what he was doing. And it became, that moment, Rav Amital said, was a formative moment in his life where he said, I'm going to live as if the world does rest on my shoulders. As if I, you know, the world was created for me, so to speak. Not in an arrogant way, but in a responsible way. So a certain amount of self-confidence is sometimes needed to make a tremendous impact. Now, you were saying before that even though this shiur is really about teenagers, self-esteem and also preparing a child happens much earlier. So I found this from a very good website called Empowering Parents by Josh Shipp. The first drop in self-esteem occurs at the outset in early adolescence, ages 9 to 13, when the young person's separation from childhood creates a loss of contentment with being defined in a loss of contentment with being defined and treated any longer as just a child. In this process, many components of self-definition are now considered childish. Beloved interests, activities, and relationships that supported self-esteem may be sacrificed for the sake of future growth and acting like an older child. So I think many of us can imagine times when kids we know have gone through this, where they may have been so into Barbies or baseball cards or something, and now they are made to feel like their interest is babyish, childish, and they have to be grown up. But they have to redefine their whole personality and who they are. And he goes on to say that even relationships, even the level of the way they relate with grandparents can change, because now they, as kids are in these in that age group of 9 to 13, everything kind of becomes about the friends and socializing. So if they had a style of opening up and really enjoying spending time with grandparents, they may even become insecure or self-conscious about that and be trying to assert themselves as, you know, more adult or more grown up. But this type of transition, he says, can create the first crisis in self-esteem. The second drop in self-esteem occurs during the end of adolescence, trial independence, ages 18 to 23, when the young person is confronted with the daunting reality of independence and feels overwhelmed and diminished by the future. Feeling not up to this challenge and sometimes acting this way, it is easy to feel disappointed in themselves, to get down on themselves, and even to punish themselves. Esteem falling in the process. Here I am, 22 years old, still messing up, and I can't get my life together. I believe this happens because teens have grown-up responsibilities and pressures without the benefit of grown-up experience. Many of the things that you have to face as an adult are thrust upon you right when you're going through the most awkward time in your life. You suddenly have responsibilities and pressures to deal with, but you don't have any prior experience to guide you. So I believe it's understandably a time of stress. We'll read the end in a second, but first of all, I think this, in many of our communities, with certain kids, this can even happen earlier than age 18, depending on what school they're in or community or the expectations. But if they think they're supposed to be getting a certain kind of summer job or internship or certain responsibilities, it's the idea of falling short of one's responsibilities that can make one feel like a failure, and they can react poorly to the stress. When you're young, a common thing to do is shut down or get irritable and moody. When parents talk to me about their kids, the two most common ways they describe their teenagers are, my daughter just yells and snaps at me all the time, or my son shuts down and seems to be in a shell. So this is what we were talking about in the beginning of the shiur, that what looks on the outside as just a lack of respect towards other people can really be a reflection of a lack of self-respect and self-confidence and a crisis that's going on inside of them. Okay, so now that we've identified that this can happen to our children, our students, what can we do about it? How can we react to it? Part 3, how to build self-respect in ourselves and in our children. So there are a lot of opinions on how to do this, and I am not a psychologist, so I don't obviously have all the answers, but two areas I would like to focus on, I wrote here. A, recognizing everyone's inherent goodness, complexity, and Selam Elohim. And B, individualizing and diversifying foundations of self-worth. So let's talk about those two aspects as we move through the sources. Okay, so the first one is from Masechet Brachot. Kishem she'en da'atam domeh ze lazeh, kaf ein partzufeihem domim ze lazeh. For the mind of each is different than any other, just as the face is different than any other. So one very important basis, I think, that can help us build self-esteem in our children is first the, you know, sort of theory of multiple intelligences, that we can't have, we have to recognize that everyone is created differently, with a different face, with a different mind, a different way of thinking, and we have to try to start to steer our kids to recognize their individual strengths, their personal character strengths, and intelligent strength and strengths of intelligence. Interestingly, the Rav Yehoshua Shapira writes something. This really also relates to the last section that we were talking about, also the connection between self-esteem and loving others. But I think it's important. Since we're running low on time, let's look at the English. Shimon Shkap notes that the Torah never teaches us to love ourselves. There's no commandment to love oneself. Why? Because love of ourselves is the foundation taken for granted by the Torah as a principle that, like Derech Eretz, precedes the Torah. Indeed, if a person does not love him or herself, it is impossible to command that the person should love thy neighbor as thyself. So like I said, this is a little bit back to the previous section, but I think it's such a obvious but yet deep insight into the famous mitzvah Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha, that the idea we always teach children when we teach Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha is to treat others well. But we don't kamocha, and it can't work until they know how to love themselves. So back to what we were talking about, which is getting a person to recognize their individual strengths, their individual talents, as a way of building self-esteem. This idea is also brought out beautifully by Rev Aaron Lichtenstein in Source 9. So we learned in the Mishnah in Kiddushin, one who performs a single mitzvah is blessed and enjoys long life. The Mishnah describes, on the one hand, we're given 613 mitzvot, and we're told you have to really adhere to all of them. On the other hand, we are told that you receive, olam haba, you receive great reward just for doing one mitzvah very well. So the Yerushalmi explains that this Mishnah applies to a person who has singled out a particular mitzvah which he is particularly careful never to transgress. For instance, the mitzvah of honoring parents. Therefore, some of the later Amoraim would pride themselves on the fact that they were particularly careful about certain mitzvot. One would say that he would always be careful about tzitzit, tefillin, or shalashuddas, etc. So what Rav Moshe is pointing out here is the purpose of the Mishnah saying that you get this great reward just for doing one mitzvah is that it's a value. If a person has a strength and has taken on, it's something to really strive towards and to celebrate. If a person really takes on one particular mitzvah and becomes an expert or becomes very skilled about that mitzvah, so someone who is all about chesed, or someone who is all about limud Torah, or someone who is like he mentions, all about kibud av va'em or tzitzit. So we have to, when we're raising our children, it's easy for us, we want to be perfect, and when we're educating our children, we want to do a good job, we want them to do a good job. It's very easy to focus on where they have not yet, what they're not yet accomplishing. If they're 613 mitzvot, you missed shul this morning. How could you not have gotten up and gone to minyan on time? Or I saw you not dressed appropriately. You were wearing a skirt that was an inch above your knee, or you were, doing this. And we focus on where we see our children lacking. But if we were able to first and foremost identify, because every kid and every person has this, what is my kid really showing to be a personal strength? Maybe they are always noticing everyone else and being careful to be attentive to other people's feelings. Wrapping up? Okay. So in your own ways, you can see the point of that. I got to finish up within the next couple of minutes. So, Chanoch Lenar al pi darko. It's the famous saying that we all know. It's the slogan for many schools out there. But I'm not going to read it inside. You can look at it on your own. There's an amazing Rav Hirsch in Source 11 that says, why did Esav become Esav and Yaakov become Yaakov? It was a mistake in the parenting by Yitzchak and Rivka. That rather than recognize that they had two different children with different strengths, they educated them exactly the same way. They raised them to value the same things and behave the same way. And it worked for Yaakov, but it didn't work for Esau. So we have to sometimes, the same way we have to recognize our kids' individual strengths, we have to parent our kids individually also. Or for the educators in the room, teach our kids individually. What works, if memorization works for one kid, and a different style might work for another one. The last point I wanted to make, we said to diversify, the other way to help with self-esteem is to diversify the pillars of self-esteem. So one thing that can be really troubling is, let's say your child, all their confidence comes from being an amazing basketball player. You are an amazing basketball player. In fifth and sixth, they're the star of the team. And all of a sudden, they get to ninth grade. It's the only thing they feel good about. And they either don't make the team or they become a bench warmer. Well, their whole self-esteem comes crumbling down because it's built on one aspect. So as much as we want to recognize the individual strengths of our kids, we have to make sure that there is a diverse pool of strengths that we are recognizing. And since we don't have time to fully do part four, if you just look at the back, balancing self-respect and respecting others. I'm going to sum it up, and you can look at the sources on your own time. Some people worry, and we spoke about this earlier, what if I build my kids' self-respect so much that they become arrogant? What is the balancing act? How do we make them have humility and self-esteem in the same way? So I think it goes back to the first section, which is, we said, Hamikalel atzmo v'chaveiro. It's not only recognizing your own worth, it's recognizing the worth of others. Many parents, when they're trying to build up their kid's self-esteem, they say, you are the smartest kid, you are the most beautiful kid, you're prettier than all the other girls. The truth is, that attitude or that talking that way can be difficult because as much as we want our children to feel confident in themselves, we want them to recognize what the gifts that their peers have as well. To see the Tselem Elohim in themselves, but in other people. And when is humility and self-respect balanced nicely? Is usually when they see it as much in themselves as they can in others. That really is ve'ahavta le're'echa kamocha. Once you can love yourself, you can love another person. And the last thing I'll mention is, you know what? I can't.
No, but
I can. I have another few minutes. Okay. So the final source that's very interesting is we spoke before about you can't just because I have been shamed, I cannot shame another person. You know, sometimes my teenagers, I didn't used to include. From teaching this idea, I thought about another source that I included in this sheet. My teenagers used to ask me, well, what about if a person has shamed me? Is it ever appropriate to sort of, you know, get back at them in a method of self-defense? So there's a great story with David HaMelech, where David HaMelech, who we know was one of our greatest and yet also a flawed man, was teaching, and someone said to him, you know, what's the punishment for someone who commits adultery with another man's wife? Which was really throwing in David HaMelech's face in a very public way his flaw, his sin. So David HaMelech replied, he's executed by strangulation, yet he has a portion in the world to come. But he who publicly puts his neighbor to shame has no portion in the world to come. Uh-huh. So what I think this is, as much as self-respect has to lead us to always treat others well, sometimes it also means defending ourselves. We can't allow, as much as we have to always see the Tselem Elohim in others, like we've sort of said, we first have to see it in ourselves. And if someone's comment is going to trample on ours, we have a responsibility to ourselves to defend ourselves. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you didn't have the second page? I'm so sorry. The first copy? But you know what? I don't necessarily agree because I think that if they have enough self-respect, then
first of all, maybe they won't need to find, sometimes when, and I know this even for myself, when I was first dating, it's almost like your insecurity, you want the other person to fulfill certain things in you. Well, of course I have to find someone who's this intelligent and this learned and this religious, because otherwise what does that say about me?
Yeah, right.
But if you feel sure about who you are already, then maybe you can accept, you know, you see your own flaws and you can accept those in others too.
People say, oh, compromise, but your child's not going to compromise. You've already told him he's smart, he wants to look and everything. So why should he compromise
right.
on the
but,
girl?
But your child has flaws too, right? Everyone does, meaning it's not that they should compromise and be with someone.
How are you doing?
Hello.